your ability to communicate effectively, articulate clearly what expectations are, and make sure that people are complete. I find that it's just so consistent that we think we're clear on expectations, and then we're frustrated that we didn't get a result. And then there's a finger pointing thing that happens is they weren't listening. And sometimes that's true. And a lot of the times what we begin to unpack is that I had more expectations that were not necessarily clear in the coordinating of action or the request that I was making to my staff. Anytime that there's a missing result, it always points back to unclear expectations. It's just so fundamental. And the thing is that if you're out to create results and it's your result, you're responsible for your result. And that level of responsibility, which kind of goes back into the personal, the self-management piece or the personal mastery piece, is to teach people that if you're not getting results, it's not on your people. There's something about the way in which you're leading that is ending up in no result. And if you're willing to take responsibility, you have a different way of going in, working with your people to check in with them. Like if I missed a result, instead of blaming you for not delivering on something, I might say, listen, I thought I was clear on delivering this. And clearly I wasn't clear because we didn't actually land the plane on where we were trying to get to. Was I missing something? And you become my teacher in that. You're able to tell me what was not clear and what was missing, and that improves my leadership for next time. And it actually will empower you. It'll empower you to speak up around your needs, your clarity, and what begins to come out of that is integrity, is that your responsibility also matters as much as mine. That I'm not putting the blame and onus, but we can see that there was a breakdown in what we were actually listening for and how we're coordinating action together. Clarity on expectations. You can't hold somebody accountable to something that you don't have an agreement for.
Welcome, fellow entrepreneurs and goal getters, to Entrepreneurial Elevation, Unleashing Greatness Within, with myself, your host, Kelly Beveridge, and my buddy, Scott Clark.
Is this the part where I say hello?
You can.
Sorry. Yes. Hi.
Hey, Scott. Okay, good. You're on. Awesome. So I'm excited. That was Scott chiming in, which I love. So Scott and I have known each other for quite some time. We actually go back, I was thinking about this, to high school for sure. Maybe junior high. I'm sure our paths cross.
We crossed paths, which is awesome.
And so I'm excited to have Scott here. I've always admired Scott and just have been really inspired by him and his journey and his leadership, which is what today's call is going to be around. And Scott actually is an executive leadership coach. He's the chief transformation officer for a company called Awesome Journey, where they mentor, coach, and develop leaders within businesses and organizations to improve their personal and organizational performance. And so I'm excited to have Scott on here to pick his brain around two types of leadership. One, leadership of teams and within business. And then the most important kind of leadership, leadership of self. And so, Scott, just welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Kelly.
Awesome. So I'm just going to dive in and just start asking you some questions. Let's get into it. So my first question I have, Scott, is I want to focus on the business side of leadership first. A lot of my audience is entrepreneurs or people who are running organizations and teams and businesses. And so my first question is, how important is it to have a mission, core values, and vision when you're the leader within a business?
It's a good question. I think that it's important. I think it's probably fundamental for a business. What I would say, I think in first of all, in speaking about leadership, I think it's good to distinguish the difference between leadership and management. I find, like in the context of creating a mission, core values, and a vision, can be something that could occur as like tactical, like a writing on the wall or a plaque on the wall. And we see this with a lot of leaders and managers where we have our set of core values and the core values are printed on the wall and it's what we say we do. But when the time comes, we actually do something different. And that distinction about what leadership actually is, I think is something that is important for leaders to consider when they're going into business.
So what would be the difference between leadership and management?
I think that could be context dependent, meaning it would be different for everybody. But I think it could be defined as like setting the right example, specifically being able to inspire change, inspire people to reach their goals, inspire people to be their best. But there's an internal part of leadership, and then there's an external part of leadership, which is what you were getting to in the beginning of your opening there on the two types of leadership, the business side and then the leadership itself. But essentially, I think leadership, to simplify the term, is action. Leadership really is about action, is your ability to put forward action. And specifically in this day and age, in the 21st century, we're seeing more change, more unprecedented change than we've ever seen ever. And that has a significant impact in the way in which people react to their environment, their ecosystems, and the people around them. And it's the capacity to lead in times of change is really where we need leaders at. And so what's interesting is that inside of leadership, you still need management skills. Management, you're like, you're managing your computer when you start your computer. The way that we would define it is essentially managing systems that don't think. You have process, you have structures, you have computers, you have a power button, you turn it on, you type. And any kind of management system is critical for the function of any business. The two kind of, they're embedded with each other, but they're distinct from one another, and they can't be separated. You need management, but as we know, we also need leadership in this day and age in order to support people in a way that they need to be supported in order to manage change and complexity.
Interesting. As you're speaking, I'm thinking, so management is like the systems, leadership is the act. And I always think, like, no one likes to be managed, yet people want to be led. It's like an energy. It's almost like an energy. And yeah. If I was to follow someone, or let's relate this to organizations, how do you get people to follow you when it comes to the culture of a business or the mission, values, core values? Because you can say, here's what they are, here's what we want to instill. Yet how does a leader actually inspire people to follow?
That's a good question. And again, I think it would be case specific. It could be different in every business, but as a general rule, I think it'd be easier for me to put it in the category of a leader that I would like to follow. I'll start there.
Sure.
And a leader that I would like to follow would be, first of all, somebody that has the results that I want. But just because they have the results that I want doesn't necessarily mean that how they got those results is something that I would want to take on for myself. Something that I would look for is that their actions align with their word. That what they say is a close match for what they do. And if you ever notice the people that you have the most amount of trust with in life, they talk what they say, and their actions are very closely aligned behind that. And the people that we have actually the least amount of trust, the people that we either resist or we move away from or that we're most frustrated by, or the people that we have the biggest trust gaps with, their actions have the biggest gap between what they say and what they do. They say one thing and then they go off and do the other thing. And so they don't demonstrate the very thing that they want to see their own people doing.
That's so true. Not just in leadership or business, yet in life and relationship. Like, yeah, that is so true. It's such an important way to build trust, which is do what you say you're going to do. Keep your word. That's who I know I like to follow as well, too. What would you say would be, or so we're speaking of leadership, what are some challenges? And you talked about right now, there's so much change happening. So leadership does have to be fluid and flexible, and it has changed over time. What are some of the top, let's say, two or three challenges that leaders face today? And what would be some guidance that you would give for each one? What do you see as you're working with different leaders? What are the challenges they're coming up against?
I think probably the biggest challenge that we're all up against is ourselves. I think that's probably easy to say, harder to get. I think it's our own individual reactive nature to change. The human mind really likes to know. I like to know that I'm a good leader. I like to know that I'm accepted. I like to know things are going to work out. I like to know I'm going to get my results. I want to know how life is going to look in the next year. So the way in which the mind works is we like to have security. And I think the biggest challenge about that is that our environment, like our globe, our social systems, our politics, everything is volatile and brittle. It's actually brittle. Change could just happen tomorrow. Look at what COVID did. It's like it just rocked any norm that we were even aware of. And so the very foundation from which we walk on to have a sense of self and like things are going to work out has been shaken. And I think people have been left with that sense that nothing is certain. And so the ecosystem really, with that amount of change in the ecosystem, it always creates this level of an unease that without some kind of practice for leadership, some kind of way of coming back to myself and being able to lead through times of change and uncertainty. In other words, we need to be comfortable with change and uncertainty. So in part, it's about the self-awareness that we have. And on the second hand, it's about the environment and how we react to that environment. which goes back to the self-awareness. Again, those two are distinct from one another, but they're inseparable.
That's so true. It is. There is so much uncertainty now, right? And so what guidance would you give someone who is, if they came to you and they're feeling this uncertainty, there's change happening in their organization, they want to be a great leader, and possibly they don't have that self-awareness, because the truth is not everybody does, even if you're in a leadership role. So how do you guide someone to start to learn about themselves while they're in a leadership role and responsible for other people? They've just been a CEO their whole life or in these positions and they're great at it. Yet the piece that's missing is that awareness of self and working on themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it would be important for somebody to understand their direction, like where they want to be, whether it's in a year, whether it's in 2 years, whether it's in 5 years, or whether it's in 10 years. But so that's a little bit more on the vision side of things, is like being able to understand vision and direction are not the same thing, but really understanding kind of the drift in which you're moving in, or the path in which you're moving in, and like what you want for yourself. And you need a critical examination of where you're at and a very holistic way of looking at where you're at, so that you understand the foundation that you're building all along the way in order to get to be where you're at. But probably to me, one of the most critical pieces is understanding how you experience resistance. Because when you have a, current state and a future state like that, you're bound to create a gap. The gap is from where you are and where you want to go. And from my experience with people, that gap, that level of resistance is often underestimated. It's like when I want to lose weight, I want to lose 30 pounds and I'm just going to hire a trainer and it's going to be really easy because he's going to tell me what to do and I'm just going to get to the gym. And you know, how many people set those New Year's resolutions and then 2 weeks later, they're just like right off the plan again, right? Because we don't really understand who I become when all of a sudden I don't know how to do it anymore, or it's too frustrating, or I don't have time, or this demand is taking too much of my time over here and I can't get my focus back over here. And so the interesting thing about that analogy is that when you're in resistance, you're actually on your way towards your goal.
Yeah.
And we don't master that very well. We're not taught for that. We live our life by a horizontal method, is like a connecting the dots, moving forward, and then everything should work out. But that's really not how life is. The piece around understanding self and understanding how resistance shows up in my life, be it stress, be it problems, be it some level of reactivity, cynicism, however that shows up, those are areas to lean into and to put a lot of space around. But what happens for most people is they have a tendency to react. And when we react, what we're doing is we're going back to past patterns of behavior to survive a situation, which is really reinforcing where we're currently at, not necessarily where we're going.
And so what I'm hearing you say is resistance can be a good thing because it means that you're in forward progress, right? Growth is happening and there's just an opportunity there to learn how to do something different, to become different, so you can get a different result. And right. I agree with you, right? I think that's so true. And that's where the awareness comes in. And so in leadership in business, how correlated are the willingness to work on yourself and have personal self-awareness and grow personally? How much is that related to the results you get in business or the results of how great of a leader you are to lead your team? Is there a distinction? Do you think that it matters?
I'm going to be a little bit more absolute in my answer. I'm going to say it's the only thing that matters, but I think in that respect, I think people could probably achieve results that they want that might come out of greed or force or control. So I can't really quantify a result per se just by a level of personal mastery in the way that I would look at personal mastery. But I think when you get to the root of purpose, so you had asked earlier about mission, vision, and core values. And I had started the conversation a little bit with pointing at leadership versus management first, because the context for vision, mission, and core values is more about the why, not the what or the how. And so for me, the result of something always comes back to the why does it matter to begin with? And I find that that often gets lost inside of business as people forget their why. So when you ask a CEO, why are you in business? The first answer they usually give is for profit, is to make money. And they've forgotten the seed that they planted, like the thing that inspired them one day to have this vision. Oh my God, I want to get into my business because I can help people. And I have this service that can really help this client. And they see an opportunity to be in service and to bring people along with that vision. And at some point during their career, the stress of achieving goals has overridden that initial why, the mission that they were initially up to when they first conceived of the business. And so I don't know if I could quantify results, the self-awareness piece alone, because I think it's, I don't think that self-awareness is the only piece, but it also depends on what kind of results we're actually looking for. Is it the result of just achievement in a business, like turning a company public or hiring a certain amount of people or offering a service product to a client where we have some stability in the company? Or are we talking success in the respect of an overall vision, like people in my business thrive?
Yeah.
And they're taken care of, you know? So what I would say about that, Kelly, is from a, there's the self-awareness piece, but then there's also the personal mastery piece. Self-management, I'm speaking a little bit more from leadership from the future. Self-management is, to me, is the only way forward to evolve systems and structures, because the more self-management that you have or personal mastery, like when your finances are taken care of, your health is taken care of, your relationships are taken care of, your environment, like you have good, secure living quarters taken care of, you're fed. When your personal systems are functional and they work, your ability to manage change and complexity when you're in groups of people or in interpersonal relationships, you're able to just rest into that because you don't have all of these concerns in your personal life that are getting in the way.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's so great what you're sharing. And I do find I've been a leader and in leadership roles most of my life. A lot of times leaders find themselves in a space where all of that stuff gets neglected. Right? Because we have our goal, we have the thing that we're wanting or chasing, or with leadership comes responsibility. And all of a sudden we have the pressure to produce or to be involved, or leaders first in, last to leave. And by accident, I'll just say, for lack of better words, that stuff gets put on the back burner. And so I think times are changing and people are starting to realize that when we actually take care of ourselves in the nature and the way you shared, we're actually going to be better as a leader and be able to be more productive. Do you see that a lot with a lot of the people you work with, that that's one of the key pieces? It's, well, wait a minute, you're like neglecting self because of your role as a quote unquote leader. And this is actually damaging and your results and causing you to be less productive.
Yeah. Yeah. Specifically for the people that in our business, our coaches, mastery is one of our core values. So like everybody in our business, that's the fundamental thing that we are always working on, is our personal mastery. Like we just have to clean life up. I have to be able to have a foundation that I can come back to, so that when I'm in business, I'm not personalizing issues. And the whole thing about leadership is that you're able to depersonalize things. And we know how difficult that is, because as soon as there's a interpersonal mishap or breakdown, we have a tendency to take it personal, and we don't even understand our own emotional response to that situation. And no different from what we do for ourselves, we also do with our clients. So it's actually a non-negotiable that you have to have some level of personal mastery. So when we start to work with people internally or externally, we're always looking at how they're managing their life, and without getting into further detail, but you listen for. We actually have very constructive ways of surveys and whatnot that draw out these areas so that we can actually see patterns of things that they step over. Listen, everybody that I work with wants or tends to say that they want to be a leader and to be the best that they can be. And from my experience, people tend to step over around issues, particularly the bigger issues in their life. And that is the thing about leadership, is that we say that we want to lead, but we ourselves have a tendency to step over around issues, and there's no integrity in certain areas of our life. And so from a personal perspective, if you can see that you have a tendency to step over something, like if you're stepping over your health over here, then who are you in business to say that you don't step over issues in your own business if you can't even take care of your own health? And they are directly related, the personal and the professional.
I agree with you. I always say we take you everywhere. And I have a personal experience of this. My business wasn't doing so well a few years ago, and I was working 10 to 15 hours a day doing all the right things. And I've shared this on this podcast before. Yet I was 25 pounds overweight. My relationship was a mess. Other areas of my life, I wasn't addressing. And I was like, why is my business not going to the next level? I'm doing, quote unquote, all the right things. Mm-hmm. And as I started to clean up those other areas, and like you say, you take personal responsibility and mastery of self, of course, it was correlated to my business and I started to see things shift. And so it sounds like you're saying one of the main things in business to be successful and to be a great leader is self-mastery. What would be one or two other things you would share for people who run organizations? What are some characteristics or qualities that would be important for them to possess?
There's the personal mastery piece, I think, is the first thing, and understanding what it means to lead. So who you want to be as a leader, not necessarily what you're doing in leadership. But I think the second piece to that would then be your interpersonal relationships, like your ability to communicate effectively, articulate clearly what expectations are, and make sure that people are complete. I find that it's just so consistent that we think we're clear on expectations and then we're frustrated that we didn't get a result. And then there's a finger pointing thing that happens is they weren't listening. And sometimes that's true. And a lot of the times what we begin to unpack is that I had more expectations that were not necessarily clear in the coordinating of action or the request that I was making to my staff. Anytime that there's a missing result, it always points back to unclear expectations. It's just so fundamental. It's such a fundamental rule for us to look at how well I coordinate. So I might be very specific and clear about my expectations. In fact, our arrangement for today was a good example, Kelly. I noticed how thorough you were with your expectations. And that's all of your checking in with me and whatnot all along the way was good leadership practice. That's something that we have to teach a lot of leaders. I'm like, believe it or not, because even though you're clear, you don't necessarily know how clear I am on what's expected of the result that you're looking to create. And the thing is that if you're out to create results and it's your result, you're responsible for your result. And that's that level of responsibility, which kind of goes back into the personal, the self-management piece or the personal mastery piece, is to teach people that if you're not getting results, it's not on your people. There's something about the way in which you're leading that is ending up in no result. And if you're willing to take responsibility, you have a different way of going in, working with your people to check in with them. Like if I missed a result, instead of blaming you for not delivering on something, I might say, listen, I thought I was clear on delivering this. And clearly I wasn't clear because we didn't actually land the plane on where we were trying to get to. Was I missing something? And you become my teacher in that. You're able to tell me what was not clear and what was missing. And that improves my leadership for next time. And it actually will empower you. It'll empower you to speak up around your needs, your clarity. And what begins to come out of that is integrity, is that your responsibility also matters as much as mine. That I'm not putting the blame and onus, but we can see that there was a breakdown in what we were actually listening for and how we're coordinating action together. So personal mastery and interpersonal relationships, I think, are really fundamental. But more specifically on the interpersonal piece in a business context, clarity on expectations. You can't hold somebody accountable to something that you don't have an agreement for.
I think that's, you just shared so much wisdom with what you talked about. I think that's a huge breakdown in a lot of organizations, businesses, personal relationships, right? Clear communication and agreement around expectations where both people are under the same understanding of what the agenda is and what the outcome is wanted to be, right? Desired. Right. And then taking responsibility that as a leader, if I'm communicating something and I'm not getting the desired outcome, it's simply just feedback that something has to shift within my communication.
Right.
And that's so valuable, Scott. That's huge. Yeah. So let's use this to segue a bit to a question I have about team building, because I know a big part of what you do is help organizations and leaders develop and create high performance teams. Obviously, what you just talked about, interpersonal relationships, would be, I believe, one aspect of it. What are a couple other strategies leaders can do to create high performing teams?
Strategies. Keeping in mind that leadership is more about being than doing in the context of where I'm coming from. So I just want to be mindful of that before we talk about strategies per se, so that we're not reducing leadership into just something that you go and do. But what I would say is, as a strategic thought or as a strategic outline, is to always look for feedback, to always involve people's voice, especially the lower down in an organization you go, the more important it is to get people talking, the more important it is to have people place their questions and their concerns about either what's happening internally in the business or any kind of changes that are happening. One of the things that I hear over and over again from companies that create changes, as the last couple of years have changed, so have businesses, and people are going through acquisitions, people are doing organizational changes, like org chart changes, and they'll say, okay, we're aligned on the new org chart, and they'll go out and they'll deliver it to the organization. And then all of a sudden there's all these breakdowns in the organization and people don't understand their new roles. And the thing about alignment is the thing to look at as a strategy is that we're not aligned on anything until there's no more questions or concerns about the changes that have happened. But it's interesting because there's often a group of leaders or executive that make these big decisions inside of the company. They're aligned. And because they're aligned, then they roll out, and that's the last time they talk about it. And then it creates a great deal of confusion inside of the company. And so if you want to me, if you want to cultivate a trusting high performance culture, you're always involving people's input on things. You have what we call positive feedback loops. So I might have a kind of a new idea or a new product to deliver to the company, and I'm pretty certain it's going to work. And I'm going to say, this is what we're doing moving forward, but we're not going to move forward, Kelly, until you share with me any questions or concerns. And we're not going to move forward with anything until we get those complete.
Yeah.
Because that allows us to get aligned on whatever we're going to do moving forward.
Yeah. No, that's great. And that was your speaking. I'm thinking of Richard Branson. I believe he does a great exit. He's a great example of that. I've read a couple of his books, and he's like, when I'm at the airport, I go and talk to the baggage handler guys. What do they need? Yeah. What are their concerns? What do they see as the problem? Versus just always, like you're saying, having the top people be aligned. How's it trickling down? Yeah. And they're not even the ones most of the time in the ground where the problems are happening that they're solving. They're just allowing a system for everybody's voice to be heard. I think that obviously also adds to the culture too, and the camaraderie. And that's huge with leadership too, getting everybody in momentum towards the direction you're going. Okay, so I want to just one last question, and then I want to shift gears, because right now we're talking about leadership within business, and I want to shift gears and talk to you personally about your personal life and leadership of self and a little bit of the journey you've been on. So let's shift. I want to shift to yourself. So we touched a little bit about this, about leadership in business, that it's about self-awareness and self-mastery. So my question for you is, take us back to the initial times in your life when maybe it was like your first benchmark for yourself, where you had this realization that, what's required right now from me is leadership of self. Because I don't think that we just are born and all of a sudden we're like, we're going to be a leader of self, right? It's like life's happening, experiences are happening, circumstances. And through those things, there's this awareness or realization that what is required of me right now is to be a leader of self, right? Mm-hmm. And so when would be a benchmark or a couple benchmarks in your life when that happened or you were aware of that? And maybe talk a bit about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure if it's the answer that you're looking for, but I'll start here because it's the thing that came up for me. It was probably when I actually started competing professionally that emerged more out of I'm going to call it, for lack of better terms, a broken childhood, where I had many years of just violence. And when I had got to the age of 18 and 19, I was experiencing a large degree of PTSD and what I would classify now as possible depression. It wasn't a clinical depression back then, but I was just broken. There was a lot of my friends that I was hanging around at that point that were getting into some things that I just didn't want to get into. And, you know, partying, drinking and that kind of stuff. And I had lived enough years in that environment at that age, doing that, where the violence that I had experienced combined with the direction that everybody else seemed to be going just wasn't working. And I was just at a really, really, really low point at my life. And I realized at that point that unless I had done something with myself, the future just was, I remember this very clearly. There was only two paths ahead of me at that point in my life. One was that I was going to end up crazy. I remember I was visioning, I'm going to end up in a damn insane asylum. It was like white walls. And the other one was to fight for my life, literally to fight for my life. I just couldn't see any other way out. And I had chosen that path, and I had joined a fellow here in Calgary by the name of Mike Miles. And as soon as I entered into that community, it was like, I don't know, there were so many people there that just had similar backgrounds. It was like I felt a community. I had a breath of fresh air for the first time in years.
Wow.
And I will never forget this moment. I was banging on the bag there one day, and Mr. Miles walked into the room. And at that point, I was like, I was intimidated. I was a young kid. I was like 19 years old. And he's a legend in the sport of Muay Thai, which is the sport that I had competed in. And I remember him walking into the gym and I was a little bit nervous because I hadn't actually seen him around very much. And I'm banging on the bag and trying my best to do, whoever else was teaching the class was like instructing us to bang the bag. And he walked over to me at that point in time and patted me on the back and whispered in my ear, said, "You could be a world champion one day." And then he walked off. And those words to me changed my entire life. It changed the whole, for the first time, I have tears coming up here. For the first time, I actually saw a vision for myself, like a future for myself. And it was like I had found a path, like a future to live into. And I stayed there for upright. Well, I still go down there, actually. I'm still very close to my instructor, Mike Miles, and love the man very much. But I had actually fought and competed for 10 years under his wing, and he had taken me under his wing and brought me all around the world. But what was more interesting, another benchmark that I think is worth noting here, is the transition from fighting into something new, which is the leadership path that I'm on now. I recall the pressure that I felt at nearing the end of my career. Something just did not feel right anymore about what I was doing. And I had 49 fights in the ring. And I remember coming back from Hawaii after my 49th fight. And I had woke up one morning and I had this visceral voice come through my body. It was my own voice. And it was just so clear to me, I don't want to hurt people anymore. It was the oddest thing. It was not something that I had ever contemplated before. And it just came through my body. I don't want to hurt. And I realized in that moment that I had been fighting my whole life for peace, that my life was about creating peace, not fighting and aggression and violence. And I knew in that moment that my days in the ring were limited. And, I think you were actually part of my life back then when you had introduced me to the Psi work, which that was another benchmark for leading me in this direction when I had saw Todd and was like, oh my God, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I found a future again in that, in a major transition in my life, a major benchmark moment of moving from this life of violence into this life of servitude and inspiring other people to see themselves and what was possible for their future.
Wow. Thank you so much for being vulnerable enough to share that story. I think it's really special. And I think it's important that a lot of people hear, because bullying and violence and growing up in environments that shape us, obviously, I have a belief the past is perfect in the way that we're not able to change it. So we are who we are because of all of our past experiences. Yet you having the courage, Scott, to go and find a community that was going to serve you so that you can take control and change, that is leadership of self. Even if you didn't know you were doing that in the moment, right? It's, you still did it. And to have the bravery to do that, especially at a young age, because at 18 and 19, we're so impressionable, right? And we're figuring ourselves out. Yet your journey really is a journey of self-discovery. And I love that you then had that epiphany of, hey, wait, like I have changed my life. I am a leadership in a way, yet it's not looking the way I want it to anymore. I don't want to be in an energy of fighting, even though it's a healthy competition, it's still got that energy. I want to go and find something of servitude like you shared. Yeah. And I think that's really cool because a lot of times we don't know what our path is going to be or where we're going to go. We just have an idea of what we want it to look like. And the truth is you just got to take the steps, get involved, get in action. And it will lead to what's next. Yeah. I don't know what my life is going to look like next year, right? I have an idea. Yeah, it not be, right? And I think that's part of leadership too. And so I'm just really proud of you. And the cool thing is because you had the courage, like you're impacting so many people's lives right now. I know a lot of people are inspired by you and you're the example for a lot of people that if you did it, they can do it. And I think that's really cool. Speak about that. Speak about being the example in leadership and then like mentorship. You mentioned Mike Miles, and I think part of your story I want to talk about is that whisper in your ear he gave you that you're going to be a world champion. So how important is mentorship, and like how and why is mentorship so important? Because that one word that one saying he whispered to you was like life changing.
Yeah. Well, how important is, I don't know how people get through life without a mentor, honestly. I have always had one since that age, actually. I've been working with the current coach right now since 2014. And so we're going on a 10-year relationship as well, him and I. I think it's critical to have somebody that, again, it's like looking to somebody that has the results that you want or has been through what you are going through and can help you get to be where you want to be. I think it's so fundamental to have that level of resource in your life. I think it's the game changer, because when you're on a trajectory for a future, there's often a competency gap. And so it's part of that competency might be viewed also as like you don't know what you don't know. And if you've ever taught somebody and you can see where they're at, if, yes, I remember being there and I know exactly what you're going to try to do tomorrow. No, you're not doing that. You got to self-correct them to keep them on track with what they say is important to them. So I think if you have a good mentor in life, I think you could define that by somebody that cares more about your future than you do. That cares more about your future than you do at certain times, maybe is a better way to say that. That they're willing to take a stand for you. Like when somebody, I remember how difficult many of the conversations were with Mike Miles. If you don't like the way I'm doing class, there's the door. That kind of conversation. But he wasn't saying that because I wasn't following his rules. He was saying it because I was out of integrity with the vision that he had of me as a world champion. And if I wasn't willing to step into that role as a world champion years before I was ever a world champion, then what good is the student and what good is the master? So it's a very personal relationship. And I think, my personal opinion is I don't think that we have enough people in our life right now standing for that future, willing to hold us accountable, willing to call us out on our lack of integrity when we're not living up to what our best looks like.
Yeah, I agree. And I think because one, the only way we can do that for someone else is if we're practicing it in our own life. So most people aren't going to call someone else out on their integrity and being the best version of themselves if they're not practicing it themselves. Yet, yeah. I like what I want to ask you, because your story that you shared, it is really inspiring, Scott. And so what would you say to somebody who is Scott at 18 and 19, the Scott version of yourself at 18 and 19 now? If somebody's out there and they're feeling lost, they're feeling conflicted, they've had a rough go for whatever reason it is, and they're at that point where it is going to be one path or the other. What would be some guidance that you can give that person?
I would probably ask them what they want. I think that's the first thing. And often you're going to get I don't know. I think at that age, I think there's a lot of things happening. We're forming an identity where we're realizing at that point in time that we're on our own, really. You're 18 years old and now it's up to you moving forward of how your life is going to go. Mom and dad are no longer going to save you. But I think the big thing is getting people to understand who they want to be in life, not necessarily what they want to do. So if there's things that are confusing about their future, leveraging resource mentor, somebody that, you know, might help them kind of sort through the confusion. Confusion is always a good thing in our work. In fact, if somebody's not confused, then they're probably not doing coaching. Confusion is the way to wisdom. Confusion always precedes wisdom. And so it's the only time that we begin to ask the most important questions in life. Who am I? What do I want? Where am I going? I encourage when I'm working with, which I have worked with a lot of people around that age, I always encourage them to lean into the anxiety or lean into the confusion, lean into the not knowing, lean into the questions, and to try to get them to stay with the questions as long as they can.
Yeah. And to be honest, I think that advice is good for any age. Like you talked about, you went through that at 18 and 19, and then all those years later again when you decided to leave fighting. And then I'm sure there's been a few chapters in between there. I know I've gone through that recently, just last year at the age of 46, right? I'm like confused asking myself these same questions. And I think that that's a good message too. It's okay. As we're all learning life and learning about ourselves, this is going to be a constant thing, right? If we're open to it and open to asking ourselves the questions. And just, I have a few more questions in closing. So I know for yourself now you're at a new chapter in your life, and possibly were asking yourself those questions just a little while ago. And you and I were chatting and we were talking about spirituality and religion and all that kind of stuff. We're not going to get too much into it. Yet I know recently you've become a Buddhist, which I think it's fascinating to me because I'm really curious about it myself and been in a bit of confusion around my own faith. And so maybe speak to that now is as a part of your life and self-discovery and leadership of self is now being a Buddhist. So how did that path come about?
I've always questioned it. So that for a number of reasons, I've always had contemplative practices. So I was involved. I'm still a Reiki master, but I did Reiki and meditation for years while I was in the martial arts, mainly to tame my own anxiety and past traumas when I was going into the ring. And so I needed some level of work with the mind when I was in the martial art realm. And inside of both of those domains, Buddhism always came up, just with mindfulness, meditation, all of that kind of stuff. More specifically, recently, over the last probably 8 years, I've been contemplating going back to school for a psychology degree, but I've always maintained a level of interest with Buddhism. Thailand is also big into it. Buddhism is very dominant in Thailand as a practice or as a belief. And so it just came up in my inquiry about what direction I want to take my learning in the future. And it was actually my coach that had prompted me to look at possibly becoming or looking into Buddhism, like as more of a formal practice or study. And I did actually choose that path. It resonated with me right away. And I just dived in, and the rest is history. I've been studying ever since. I took my Buddhist vows in 2020, and here I am.
When it comes to Buddhism practice, what would be a philosophy or a piece of advice that you can give somebody who's in self-discovery?
I'll speak just with my learnings with Buddhism. I think the first thing is that I wouldn't actually classify it as a religion or a faith. I think there's a difference between like theistic religion and my experience, which is more of a spiritual practice. And it's a 3,000-year-old practice where really we're understanding human existence, and suffering that happens is really the thing that I have taken away from that. And suffering for me is just it's such a natural thing. You kind of like what we were talking about with addressing. What would I tell my 19-year-old self? I'd be like, lean into the anxiety. You're not any different than anybody else. I don't know anybody that doesn't have shame, guilt, anger, any of the emotional states. And what we notice about people when we're not attuned to our own suffering or attachments or clinging and that kind of stuff is that we have an aversion. We have a way. We always want to move towards pleasure and avoid our own pain. And so we actually don't understand our own existence in many ways. We're very ignorant. So that would probably be the invitation, is just, it's not necessarily you're not moving into it to believe in something outside of yourself, as opposed to moving into something to understand yourself better, would be my best take on it for now.
Awesome. No, thanks. I'm curious. And I think it relates to a lot about what we're talking about with leadership and leadership of self and our journeys. And so just two last questions. What would you say now, Scott, you've had a journey yourself. What would you say now is your definition of success?
Two things is that I am driven to get out of bed and do my work. Like work for me, the joy and the drive that I have, the ambition that I have to get to do my work. I get to be in service. I get to go out into the world and listen. And so that to me is, there's nothing that makes me feel better about who I am as an individual, more successful than who I am as an individual, when I get to be with people in a way that makes a powerful difference for them. And there's like a selflessness, like I'm not looking to get anywhere. There's just an ability to listen. So I think joy and servitude are the measures of success for me. Is, am I doing what I'm here to do? What my purpose is? And do I love it? Does it bring me joy?
I love it. And what would you say to somebody who is in action, they're being a leader of self, they're in a leadership role of other people, yet they're just struggling to get to the next level and elevate their business and personal life? What are a couple pieces of advice you would give them to look at?
Yeah, the more of the mechanical side is get a mentor. That's the first thing I would say, or a coach, or leverage your resources. But the thing is, the important piece about that is that you have to be talking about it. You have to be in a conversation about what's not working in your life. If you're not talking about, change isn't happening. You can't change what you can't see. And when you get into conversation, that's the beginning of transformation. Conversations disappear concerns. So there has to be people in your community that are willing to listen and willing to work through whatever is getting in the way of you having the results that you want in your life.
Awesome. So find somebody that you can talk with, who's going to support you in figuring it out, helping you answer the questions, find solutions, and get back on track and get moving. I love it. Okay. Yeah. Oh, if there was one more thing that you want to share before we end, anything?
I don't think I have that right now. No.
I just thought I'd come back and see. Cool. So Scott, where can people find you? So if people are, who are listening are like, you know what, I would love to learn more about Scott, get to know him better. I have a business. We have a corporate business here in Calgary or area. We could use some coaching to help our team grow and be in high performance. How can they find you?
Yep. We have a website, www.awesomejourney.ca is the website that you can go to. Also, you can find my LinkedIn profile would probably be the easiest one. So if you go to Scott Clark on LinkedIn, you should be able to find my name. You might have to go to Scott Clark Calgary or Scott Clark Awesome Journey. And I'm sure my name will pop up in those areas there.
Okay, awesome. Everybody, definitely get a hold of Scott. He's a wealth of knowledge. He has had a journey himself personally. He's always willing to share. And that's always been my experience of you, Scott, is you're authentic and you are true to your word. And you've been a great friend. And so thank you so much for being on my podcast today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate being here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Okay, that was amazing. I loved having Scott on and sharing. And it's always so special for me when I have good friends on and I hear parts of their journey that I haven't heard before. And so just thank you, Scott, so much for being here. And I actually want to give a proper introduction to Scott because I didn't do that at the beginning. I just got too excited to dive in and start interviewing him. Yeah, Scott has a phenomenal background. He's actually a 4th degree black belt and 4-time world champion. He has taught martial arts for 22 years. He's 2 years into his Buddhist studies. He's 10 plus years into investing himself through various personal development courses and classes and teachings. And he's a 20-year Reiki master, which is amazing, and also an energy and mindfulness teacher, which I'm sure you can tell by his calm demeanor. And he's just really clear and amazing with his communication. When it comes to Awesome Journey, Scott's been working with them since 2013 as an executive leadership coach and now the chief transformational officer. And he's just a phenomenal mentor and coach and leader. Obviously, you can see that he practices what he preaches. He's a person of integrity, always working on leadership of self so he can lead others. He's one thing also to mention too that I know is very important to him is he is a father of two. And he's also a husband to his beautiful wife, Sarah. And so just, Scott, thanks so much for being here. If you resonated with Scott and what he has to say, or you are a part of a corporate business or in a leadership role in business or within your organization, and you want support, right, to create high value teams, or you want support for yourself within leadership and becoming a better person when it comes to self-mastery and therefore leadership of others, please go to the show notes and reach out to Scott, connect with him. And ask them the questions that you want to ask. So just once again, Scott, thanks so much for being here. And everyone else, just thank you so much for listening. With love, greatness, and success, it's Kelly Beveridge.